ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post, and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking, as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled. Oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, I suppose it gives me no great pleasure to introduce a weekend where Munster are facing such huge odds of making it through to the quarterfinals, but look, it is what it is. We are where we are. It's Munster versus Ospreys on Sunday. I suppose the only saving grace is that we'll know exactly what we will have to do at that stage, or we'll know that we're facing into a dead rubber. Either way, I suppose we're trying to generate some bit of excitement around it. But the starting lineup for Munster: Dave Kilcoyne, Niall Scanlon, Stephen Archer, Finian Witcherly, Billy Holland, Peter O'Mahony, Jack O'Donoghue, CJ Stander, Hanrahan and Murray at halfbacks. And then Calvin Nash, Rory Scanlon, Chris Farrell, Andrew Conway and Mike Haley make up the rest of the backs. Keith Earls, of course, injured. Replacements: Kevin O'Byrne, Jeremy Lachman, John Ryan, Arno Botha, Jack O'Sullivan, Craig Casey, Ben Healy and Dan Goggin. Kick-off, of course, on Sunday at 1 p.m. Tom, hard to get motivated for this, but I suppose, look, we've no choice. We have to get out there, take the field, see where we... see if we're still in it, if we're a fighting chance at that point of the day, and, suck it up that ultimately we haven't been good enough to have our own destiny in our own hands with regards to this pool and with regards to the Champions Cup. On the flip side, if we do get out of it, if we are knocked out, we don't have much time to lick our wounds either.
No, it's it has been a very difficult season in Europe for Munster. Admitting that the standard of opposition has been very strong, much stronger than what, in the other pools. And, really, if we look historically, the two sides who've been knocking us out of Europe at the semi-final stage for the previous three seasons. But even then, I think Munster will look back and think, we had an opportunity and a couple of opportunities in games to maybe be a couple of points better off than where we are at the moment. So in that regard, it'll be frustrating. So you never really want to go into the last game of the season, or of the European pool season anyway, looking for other people to do you favours. And I suppose that's what'll kind of stick in the craw a small bit. But Munster can only go out there and play what's in front of them and, do the best job they can with that. And Ospreys coming over, look, they've had a pretty poor season, but they've got a pretty strong side named when you look at it, especially in their pack. And it won't be an easy game for Munster. And it'll be something that I think, regardless of what happens in the other games, Munster will be looking to send the fans home happy. And there's a good balance between experienced guys starting and exciting younger players coming off the bench. So I suppose, for Munster, that's where the real draw is for me. See what they can do on the day. If it's still out there to qualify, do the very best you can. But if it's not, give people a reason to look forward to the rest of the season and next season.
Yeah, I think we faced into a game against Sale back in 2015 against Sale we had no chance of going through. At least we have some slim mathematical one with Sunday's game. But Tom, look, I suppose you'd just hope to go out and see a bit of entertaining rugby. I suppose the shackles are off now and that it's 5 points or bust. It could be 5 points or bust regardless, but we were hoping for a performance at the bare minimum.
Because look, it's been a pretty bad run of results from Munster over the course of the last couple of games. They've lost three in a row, Leinster, Ulster, and then Racing. Look, they're three very difficult games. Two of those were in very difficult places to go. But look, Munster aspire for better than that. And this game now at home against the Ospreys, a response really is needed. And, you know, they've, you know, when you look at the mathematics of it, look, while it is technically possible, it's, you know, going to be incredibly difficult. We need the likes of Gloucester and Northampton to lose and Glasgow to win, and we need Saracens to lose against Racing. So, like, it's at the point where, look, we want to see Munster playing well, going out there and scoring a few tries and, you know, looking as best they can, because it's been a difficult block of games. This block of 13 games since the Ospreys game over in the Liberty Stadium has been incredibly difficult and probably one of the difficult blocks of games that we've had in a number of years. So it's going to be a tough one, I would say, but Munster should have the wherewithal to get the win here. And if they can, look, it'll send people home happy at the very least, regardless of what the outcome is.
Tom, without confusing or bogging people down in it, but what exactly has to fall Munster's way in order for them to have a hope on Sunday?
Well, we need Racing to beat Saracens, first of all. If that doesn't happen, then whatever else happens is irrelevant. If we need Glasgow to beat, they're playing Sale. We need Glasgow to beat them without a bonus point. We need Gloucester and Northampton. Gloucester are playing Toulouse, and Northampton are playing Lyon. We need both of those guys to lose as well, and we need we need them to get a bonus point win, and that would put us in with a shot of qualifying on 16 points. So if we don't get a bonus point, or Racing don't beat Saracens, then it's a done deal, and we need a lot of those results to go our way, but even before the game kicks off, so we'll have a pretty good idea as to what the crack is once we take the field.
Yeah, I suppose we will, Tom. If this Ospreys side coming over here have had a torrid European campaign, really, but they did put up a bit of a performance against Saracens last time out. Any danger there, Tom?
Oh, but look, of course there's danger. Like, you, in any side that's got Alan Wynne-Jones, Justin Tipperick, even Dan Lydiot in their side, and George North, is a side that must be respected and is a side that can hurt you. So, like, I mean, they put it up against Saracens last week. Didn't have the quality to get the job done. And I think once Alan Wynne-Jones went off, the air kind of fell out of the Ospreys a small bit. But, like, you know, overall, I'd say again, Munster absolutely should be winning. But with the quality that Ospreys have in their side, they've been on a desperately bad run. Like, they've been playing very poorly, losing a rake of games both in Europe and in the Pro 14. But that said, you look at the guys who they've brought in, and they are guys who can hurt you. Munster will still need to perform. If Munster performed even to the standard of last week, they'll win the game. But it's kind of, you know, getting that confidence up, and getting that, that kind of the feel of going into games and not feeling that pessimism. Like, they can go out there and win this game if they play like they did last week, but they'll need to be, again, much more accurate, much more clinical with the chances that they get, and try and get that kind of a killer instinct into games again, where you're going out and kind of really hurting teams.
Yeah, you'd hope that we can kind of get back to that sort of level. Tom, it's always down kind of feeling when you're looking at the Champions Cup, because we do kind of associate April with a quarter final, and if we're lucky to get through the end of April for a semi final, and then, you know, obviously we haven't looked forward to any finals of late, but there's always that anticipation if you're kind of in the shake up or in the last eight in this great competition. It is very, very disappointing, and I suppose we have been spoiled by Munster's continual regular progressions to the knockout stages over the past few years. It just feels eerie and odd, and I know we've no God-given right to be in quarterfinals, but it doesn't sit well.
No, and we certainly do have, I think where Munster want to be is in the knockout of the European Champions Cup. And you can look at this season with the kind of the wonky way that the groups are seeded, that a group of death like this, Munster needed a lot of things to go right. Especially in a kind of a compressed World Cup year, we'd need a lot of things to go right. Whereas the likes of Saracens and Racing have more quality depth. I mean, they just do. I don't think there's anything controversial about that. But, you know, Munster to be kind of, it kind of was an illustration of where we've fallen short over the last three seasons, and we haven't really seen anything in those two games that we've, or the two times we've played Racing. Like we've done four games overall now in our encounters with those two sides. We haven't seen anything to show that we've kind of pushed beyond that level where Racing were beating us in Bordeaux and then Saracens were beating us twice, you know, in Lansdowne Road and then in Coventry. So it is a kind of an illustration of where Munster still have to go to. And in a group like this, you know, you're going to have to kind of overcome one of those historic opponents, you know, to kind of get beyond them. And we certainly had opportunities in Thomond Park and in Allianz Park to come away with more points than what we did. And that will rankle. But where Munster want to be is winning the Heineken Cup. And if you're not winning it, you want to be kind of losing in a final or a semi-final. So if Munster don't get beyond that stage this year, like, you know, don't get beyond the pools, it has to be used as a launch pad into the rest of the Pro 14 season, where I think Munster absolutely have a shot of winning a Pro 14 title. And then building into next year to get guys who are, you know, to come in and refresh the positions that I think we all can see there's certain areas need a bit of refreshing. Once Munster can look to try and do that, then you try and take as best as you can out of not qualifying for the quarterfinals to use the rest of the season and the kind of the space that comes with not having those one or two big physical games to use those as a platform to build into something more in the Pro 14.
Tom, for any WWE or WWF fans out there, you'll know the sound of that. The legendary man himself, The Undertaker. And Tom, the bell seems to be tolling for our friends across the water, the thin-skinned Saracens, who don't like to be called fat. They also don't like to obey by the salary cap, apparently, as they have been caught, I suppose, to use a rather sarcastic term. They've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, not once, but twice.
Three times. God only knows how many times. I think, look, a lot of people seem to be very happy with regards to the troubles that Saracens are going through. I'm one of them. And when it comes to like why I think that is, I think it becomes when you see what is happening over there at the moment, which it appears that they're going to be deducted another 35 points, which looks like it'll almost certainly mean a relegation from the Gallagher Premiership for just consistent salary cap breaches that turn out that they're over the salary cap again this season. 2 million over is the numbers that I've seen. 2 million pounds over. And like this is including dispensation for marquee players and everything else. It is astonishing. And it's like, I think the reason why when you think of Saracens, you think of them drowning out Munster fans in Welford Road. You think of them with their kind of Wolfpack branding. You think of honesty and integrity being written on their stadium. It just comes across to me to be the most most self-aggrandizing club. And everything that they've achieved for me, even when this stuff first came out, everything that they've achieved as a club in the last, I'd say, 5 years for me is meaningless now. Because the reason why, because people go, well, why do you care? Because we are living in the Saracens era. Right? They have been like the premier team in Europe for the last couple of years, contesting in finals, winning them. They've won three Heineken Cups. They were in a Heineken Cup final before they won that one. They've won Gallagher Premierships. And it's like, for me, people ask, oh, well, it's not a big, there's no salary cap in Europe. They get into Europe through the Gallagher Premiership. Every player that they have that they're using to win these tournaments is improperly at the club. They're paying them too much money. And it's not like there's guys taking pay cuts. Like they have guys there who they've, you know, other clubs have had to make a decision. Will I keep on this player or that player? And they've had to lose good players. Like it's happened with Harlequins. It's happened with Exeter, with Santiago Cordero. Like they've had to lose players to stay under the cap. But Saracens, when the same thing was in their lap, they decided to go, well, actually, what if we don't have to make that decision? What if we just keep everybody on? And it's like, that then becomes, well, why is it such a big deal? It's because they agreed to sign up to a salary cap and then just forgot, they would say, just did not abide by it. Everybody else was trying to, you know, exist under the salary cap. And there's been other sides who flaunted with it as well. But nobody as consistently and as far over the line as what Saracens have done.
It's just, a beggar's belief that they would just ignore it and think that they could just kind of, you know, sweep it under the carpet and go again and they'd be fine. It also a beggar's belief that, you know, they thought that they could just literally continue on to keep those same players there. And they were, you know, unless the players came out with some major statement that they were taking huge pay cuts, then it was still going to be the same wages, I'd imagine. And we didn't hear any of those kind of soundings coming from players, coming from agents or anyone around the club. So it didn't exactly take Sherlock Holmes to figure that one out, did it?
No, but like, even then, like, if you accept that they have to exist under the salary cap, and if you look at Pat Lam recently, when they announced they were signing Semi Radradra, they came out, Pat Lam went to the bother of actually going, well, this is how we're under the cap, because we might have these big players here, but what we've done is that we've taken all these players from lower level rugby, and they make up a large chunk of our squad, and trying to improve those players. So that's how they're able to stay under the salary cap, like, I think it's 7 million plus dispensation for marquee players plus dispensation for England players and stuff like that. You get credits towards it. Like, so he explained that. But when you look at Saracens, I mean, it was a scam that was going on right in front of us. Like, you know, when you look at the teams, like the team that they were able to name, even against Worcester, like, because they were docked 35 points at the start of this season. And then, like, they were fined, but like, when it comes to like, can they make up a 35 point difference? Well, of course they can. They'll just name a team that's got a British and Irish line starting pack almost, the likes of Owen Farrell, who'd start for the Lions if they were playing tomorrow, and the likes of Liam Williams and all these other players. And it's like, they were looking to try and get around their punishment by playing the team that caused them to be punished in the first place. And it's just, again, it just did not seem that it was like that it was fair to the other sides. And I'm sure there's no angels in the Gallagher Premiership as well. I'm sure there's other sides who are flirting with the salary cap who are close enough to it. But for me, it's just, you know, when you look at Saracens espousing all this stuff about their culture and everything else, and it just, to me, seems like that it was rotten from the very start and rotten to the core. And it's like, it especially when you're living in an era dominated by this club, that's why, to me, it's such a big deal, because, you know, it's been shown that it's been improperly assembled and wrongly maintained. Like, retaining your players after you win trophies is the biggest challenge if you live in an environment where there's a salary cap. And they just didn't have to abide by it because they didn't bother. And that's how they were able to keep, like, to have a World Cup winner coming off the bench for them, you know, in Vincent Koch, Will Skelton. You know, they had Schalk Berger there last year. You know, like, you've got all these quality players, like, and it just all, to me, seems like it was, like, the last couple of years of European rugby, to me now, have a massive question mark over them, because we don't, like, as in, could they have won it anyway, even if they hadn't been cheating the salary cap?
Should there be, I suppose, a bit more joined up thinking between the domestic leagues and the European and the Champions Cup, you know, whereby, like, you know, if you can't reasonably be expected to be okay to win one league through a team that's been illegally assembled in another. You know what I mean? There is a knock-on and a following. You're in the Champions Cup because you won your domestic competition or because you came in the top six of it. If you came in the top six or won that competition by cheating, then I don't see how you can reap the benefit in another competition. It's like saying you can dope in the 1500 metres, but, you know, if you're racing in the 3000 metres, then it's okay. You know, it makes no sense.
It doesn't. And I think Jackie Lorenzetti, the Racing owner, has come out recently, as in the last couple of hours, and said that that's something that they should be looking at. Because, like, people go on about how much money the French teams spend in Europe. They have a very rigid salary cap that is 11.3 million euros, right? And when you look at what Saracens have been looking to pay, it's actually more than that. Even if you convert the pounds to euros, it's more than that. So, like, when I look at the likes of Racing and all these other lads, if they go over that budget, like, they, like, as in the salary cap, they get hurt, like, as in they get stung badly by the league. So it's like it's a kind of thing where they have to abide by it. Now, I know like Irish clubs don't have a salary cap, but I'd like to think that if there was a salary cap that the IRFU signed up for, that we would abide by it to the letter. Because to me, this, you know, like to sign up to something like the salary cap, to then go and breach it repeatedly, to me, that's the thing. It kind of really goes against the spirit of the game. And you hear a lot of the stuff about like rugby family and all this other nonsense. To me, when you have a side like Saracens who've been essentially cheating their fans, cheating the opposition, cheating the opposition's fans, and cheating the league that where they've been playing in, and then that stain runs to Europe as well because you can't disentangle the two. To me, it's the biggest story in Europe, in European rugby for the last, in maybe even in world rugby over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, to be that big, and to then like to have it all taken away because of their. Just their attitude and their attitude to flaunt the salary cap and to flaunt it in front of everybody. Because you look at their team and you go, if they have to abide by a salary cap, how can they have this team? It didn't make sense, and it was happening right in front of us. And it's just like, because I watch a lot of Gallagher Premiership rugby. Like, I watch a lot of rugby, and I like the rugby. And like, a lot of people say, oh, the standard of rugby in the Gallagher Premiership is rubbish or whatever else. I don't agree. I really like the rugby there. And like, to see like decent teams and people who I know there, who people are asking, why aren't you competing with Saracens? Well, because they were cheating the salary cap. And it's like, it's not about the money. It's about agreeing to sign. It's about signing up to a salary cap and then flaunting it. That to me is the problem, and I think why everything that they've achieved now for me has just a colossal question mark written all over it.
If they were, or to use the family analogy, Tom, I suppose if they were, that, if it was the rugby family, then Saracens would be that relative that nobody invites to Christmas dinner, and dare not mention his name throughout the day. They've earned themselves no friends or favors, really. And you can often have, I suppose, you'll have rivalries, and you'll have, you know, clubs who don't like each other from a competitive point of view. But I put it to you that this goes deeper than that. Now they've really poisoned the waters for themselves, not just now, but, you know, down the line as well.
In the future, I mean, they've eroded all trust, and like, it's a bit like saying everybody has a club that they're a member of a club. Everybody has a club that they hate, and whatever about like rugby values or whatever else, you despise those people who are in that club when you're playing or whatever else. If they're walking down the street, you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be having a cut off them or anything, unless it's like a heated Limerick club rivalry. But when it comes to like this kind of thing, they've essentially disrespected their opposition in the worst way, because if you agree to sign up to the salary cap, you accept that there's going to be a bit of wiggle room here and there, that people are going to try and, you know, they're going to nip every corner if they can. But to the level that Saracens have done it, I mean, to be £2 million over a £9 million limit with their marquee players, and this is including marquee players, it just goes to show how out there this has been, and just the disrespect they've shown their own fans, the disrespect they've shown their league, and, you know, and that can't help but bleed into Europe. So it's just like, it really, for me, is just like, there now is an asterisk over everything that they have achieved. Everything. Like, they shouldn't be having stars on their shirt. There should be three asterisks over that logo. And for me, it's a shame, because I think they have very decent fans, by the way. Like, as in, there's some of them, like, you know, crow a little bit much on social media. But for me, there's a lot of really good fans of Saracens. And for me, when I think of this, I think of, you know, okay, maybe these good fans maybe could have looked up at their match program and realized something was up there when they were looking at this team sheet. But I feel sorry for them, because they're owners of the club, the guys involved, the people running it, they've cheated them. And they've actually now, they're actually putting the club into jeopardy, into taking this thing away from them. Because, I'm presuming they're not going to be stripped of their titles. But that's who I feel sorry for, that like that their club cheated them. And they now have to live in a world where, like, they don't know what's going to be happening with their club week to week, where they're going to be playing, what's happening. Players who they've built their identity around, the likes of Owen Farrell, Mara Itoje, Jamie George, all these guys who are, you know, great players, Billy Vunipola, Meka Vunipola. And now that's all going to have to change, you'd imagine. And it's just they're the people who I feel sorry for genuinely, because they have had stuff take, like, they have been scammed the same as everybody else, and that for me is the worst part of it.
Yeah, and I suppose, look, I'd be all in favor of stripping those European titles off them all, of course, except last year's one, you know.
That one looked to me pretty genuine. We leave them with that one. But I think the years that
we're taking the 15-16 and the 16-17 ones against Racing.
Oh, take that off.
They're gone. But by Christ, we are not sending a star up the M7 to those lot. Not a chance.
I know we'll say that we may have got a star the other time. Yeah. You know, like the year they beat us when Razzie was in charge, we would have won it that year. We'll just take it. Yeah, we would have won it.
We'll take that. At least if we take a star and give them one, we're not losing ground, because
we'll
take much more of this, Tom. Deflecting away from that team up the road, who are just painfully good to watch at the moment, but Munster, on your Patreon page between now and kickoff on Sunday, what are you doing?
Okay, I'll be doing this week on TRK Premium. I'm going to be looking at the red eye, basically looking at where I think Munster can hurt this Ospreys side. And I'll be covering the game in detail on the Blood and Thunder Match Day Preview podcast, which is coming up on TRK Premium, which is at patreon.com/FreeRideKings for just €2 a month.